Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room, and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, folks, if there was one word to describe last night's Raw, it would probably be repetitive. And we're going to get into all of that very, very shortly. But before we do, we're going to bring back something people have been asking for a little while, and no better time.
Marcus Kane's Don't Get Me Started.
Look, folks, there's a lot of people out there who understand very clearly that there's something very dramatically wrong with professional wrestling today. And it's not the COVID virus that has forced WWE to create a thunderdome of screened faces and pipe in fake chants with sound men. It's not too much competition, or it's not Vince McMahon trying to monopolize the industry. It's none of those things. What it is that wrestling has lost its identity. It doesn't know what it is. And I know that there are some wrestlers, some indie wrestlers, and some wrestlers in major federations who are quick to blame the fans and say, well, you know, we're doing what the fans want us to do. And to a certain extent, that is a fact. However, the initial problem comes from the wrestlers. And I'm going to tell you what that problem is. All you guys who busted your ass, and there is absolutely no question that you busted your ass. I went through wrestling school. I know what it's like. You bust your ass. And I mean bust it. Okay, there are days when you can't roll out of bed to take a piss. So I know how hard it is. And I know that for years and years and years and years and years, everybody was looked upon as, oh, you're the fake guys. You're the guys who don't really fight. You're just the guys who pretend to fight. You're not like a boxer or a UFC fighter. And it got under everybody's nerves. And after a while, these people, who no doubt are athletes, said, we're sick of this. We feel we're a sport. That's what we feel we are. We're athletes of the highest caliber. What we do is extremely athletic and in some form competitive. Not in the wins and losses, but other ways. And we want to be designated as a sport. This was the beginning of the downfall of professional wrestling. Because the minute this happened, you were held to a different standard, and let me explain what that standard is. I'm not going to mention any names, but I just watched a movie featuring a very, very, very liberal left-wing actor playing a very, very, very evil right-wing conservative horrid person. And I thought to myself, no one protested this. No one said, why is this in a movie? No one said, oh, that's outrageous. You can't show something like that. I'm offended. No, they said, well, of course, he's the bad guy. Of course, he's got to be an evil bastard. He's the bad guy. It's only a movie. We know he's not really like that. The whole premise is we hate people like that. So when he gets what's coming to him, it's satisfying to us. Correct. Now explain to me what would happen if a professional wrestler tried to play even half as bad of that character. you all would ask that he be thrown off television, he be fired, the company be fined, you'd be on the internet whining for 600 days straight. Oh, I'm so offended. This is the problem. Movies are held to movie standards. Sports are held to sports standards. Okay? Jacob deGrom can't come out to the mound and say, before I throw the first pitch, I would just like to say that I support X, Y, and Z. And if you don't like it, you can all go F yourself. Okay? He can't come out and sneak attack a batter. But these are things you can do in a movie, and these are things you should be able to do in pro wrestling. But you can't now. You can't because you have promoted a culture that thinks of you now as a sport. This, you reaped what you sowed. You begged and begged and insisted we be classified as a sport. Even though WWE clearly is World Wrestling Entertainment. And it doesn't matter what other federation. Your ego got in the way. You couldn't stand to be the people who were called, oh, the fake guys, the fake fighters. So your ego got in the way, and you said, we want to be a sport. And when you started to get that nudge, you then were held to a standard that you should never have been held to. Because here is a simple fact, and I don't care who it offends, you are not a sport. I love pro wrestling with my whole heart and soul. You are not a sport. Ballet dancing is extraordinarily hard, and it requires exceptional athleticism. It's not a sport. High wire acts require intense training, huge amounts of physical strength and endurance and timing. It's not a sport. And pro wrestling is not a sport. Pro wrestling is an exhibition. It's really a soap opera, if you will. It's a live action soap opera. Granted, it takes a tremendous amount of athleticism to do it, but so what? That would be the equivalent of saying, you know, these Chinese-made martial arts films where they literally do a fight scene in one take, and it's 9, 10, 12 minutes. And it's not like American cinema where you throw one punch and cut, then the guy falls down, cut, then he gets back up, cut, then you throw another punch, cut. No, it's not that. These Chinese filmmakers, they run through that whole series. It's all, you know, scripted out like a dance. And for 8 minutes, the guy's climbing stairs, jumping out windows, flipping over stuff, using various weapons, and it's all one shot. As Jason Statham once said in an interview, do you understand the amount of athleticism that takes to do a 9, 10, 12-minute fight scene in one shot? Remember all the things you got to do. Make sure everything is smooth. It takes a tremendous amount of athleticism. American filmmakers don't do that. But guess what? It's not a sport. There is nothing competitive about pro wrestling other than your spot on the card. Buddy Murphy did not come down there last night and say, I legitimately hope to beat Dominic Mysterio. Didn't happen. We all knew what was going to happen before he left the dressing room. So I'm sorry, folks. I'm not shitting on pro wrestling. I'm just telling you that this is what killed professional wrestling. Your insistence that it's something it isn't. How come Robert De Niro can play an evil son of a bitch who kills minorities for fun in a movie, but you can't even have a wrestler say he doesn't like minorities? What's the difference? Well, someone will say, well, I mean, it's a movie. It's only a movie. Well, what is wrestling? What is wrestling? Wrestling's not a movie. It's not a live-action movie. What is it then? Is it a sport? You think Rey Mysterio's eye was really put out? You think Seth Rollins really thinks he's a Monday Night Messiah? I mean, have you went back to that stage? Folks, you want to bring wrestling back. There's only one way to do it. Go back to the days when you understood what you were. And what you are is an exhibition. You are not a sport. That does not in any way take away from the athleticism of the men and women who compete in it. That is what you need to get your egos wrapped around. No one goes to the ballet and watches these people dance 25-minute routines, both male and female, that you wouldn't last 45 seconds in without collapsing and being put in an oxygen tent, and say, wow, what a sport. But they don't, also they don't say, oh, they're, anybody could do that. We all understand they're tremendous athletes, and they're putting on an exhibition. That's what ballet is. We all understand that high wire artists are tremendous athletes, and they're putting on an exhibition, but it's not a sport. We all understand that in the Chinese film industry, these people who are doing 11-minute fight scenes are highly, highly trained athletes. But that don't mean the bad guys aren't evil bastards on the screen. We need to get back to this. And if we don't, wrestling as we know it is dead. And it's damn close to it. The wrestler started this because your egos couldn't take the fact that you weren't considered serious athletes. Well, the only people who didn't consider you serious athletes are people who don't like wrestling. Why do you care what people who don't like wrestling has to say? I used to get into fights with people constantly. Oh, why are you watching that fake stuff? And I said, can you do it? Go in there and do it. Let's see you try it. And when you fall on your ass, then you'll understand. I don't know why you're playing to a market that don't like you anyway. The wrestling fans understand the athleticism it takes. They're the only ones who should count. You know what you remind me of? You remind me of a guy whose girlfriend thinks you're the hottest guy in the world, but you have to find three other girls to back it up who don't like you. Now, that girl doesn't think I'm hot. I got to find a way to make her think I'm hot. Why? She doesn't like you. It's your ego. Knock it off before you kill the sport. Mike, what's your thoughts?
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, I used to tell people, when they say, why do you like watching that fake stuff? I used to say, well, put you in your prime versus this guy, Mr. X, in his prime, Ric Flair in his prime, in the same ring, and we see who does what the longest, you know? And that's what I would tell them, and they're right. These guys are focusing not on the entertainment, on the E in WWE. They're focusing on the W, the second W, wrestling. You know, when this type of wrestling is not a sport, it's a dance. It's an athletic dance, but it's a dance nonetheless, you know.
It's an exhibition. It's supposed to garner some kind of emotion in you.
Right. Right, and that's the thing. And that's what they don't get. I mean, you know, the last when Cody appeared on Arrow, they did a 5 or 6 minute fight scene, which in TV terms would be the same thing as one of these 12-minute fight scenes in one of these martial arts movies, because basically that's what they were doing. They were doing a fight scene. And it takes a lot to do that stuff. You got to hit your spots. You got to hit your marks. You got to, you know, you can't be doing a lot of this stuff, like what you got to know when to pull your punches and when not to and all that stuff. So, yeah, it's a dance. It's an athletic dance. It's a dance, you know, and it's an exhibition. It's like you said, you know, the whole thing about the high wire. I go one further. Trapeze artists.
What I was saying. High wire, yeah.
Trapeze guy. You need to be a guy to do that. You need to be an athlete to do that. I mean, but it's not a sport. It's an exhibition, and that's why they don't call it a sport. They call it, you know, the greatest show on earth. They call it a show.
Right.
You know?
Precisely correct. That's precisely correct. And until you get back to that and you put more effort into reaching out into those stands and affecting a fan's mentality than you do in your super kick, you're in trouble. Good luck to you. Because I'm watching it fade very quickly. And it's a damn shame. Anyway, let's get to Monday Night Raw. We start out with, oddly enough, we start out with Randy Orton getting ambushed by Drew McIntyre in an ambulance. Now, the funny thing about this is, Randy Orton has the look on his face that he had when The Undertaker came back after he thought he killed him. Now, I don't remember anybody saying Randy Orton killed Drew McIntyre. So why Randy Orton would react like he saw a ghost, I'm not really sure. He was told to do it. He did it. It's dumb. Now, it doesn't mean it's dumb that he got super kicked. I just mean it's dumb what his reaction was. His reaction should have been like, bring it. Bring it. I know you ain't 100%. Bring it. And then he gets Claymore kicked. That would have been fine. Didn't happen. So that's how Raw starts, with the first Claymore kick. And, you know, we've already seen this match, Todd, and the build-up for the second one, they know they have to make bigger, so I guess this is what they're doing.
Well, you're absolutely right, Dale, like you said. He comes back in an ambulance, and like, come on now. Just come out like through the crowd or something, not like the virtual. Just come out through the virtual crowd, not in the ambulance. We've seen that over 1,100 times.
Well, not only that, but it's been 2 weeks. Is he still in the ambulance? Was he that? I don't know, Mike. I don't get that one.
Yeah, I don't get it either. But you sort of kind of expected it because of how that show ended, that he was going to do this. I mean, we've seen this happen before where people get carried off and then they come back. But we've seen it happen before, but basically in the same night, though.
Right. You know? If that happened the same night, it's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it was all right. I mean, it was odd. The reaction was odd, but it was an all right thing.
The ambulance was odd. Why is he driving an ambulance? What the hell do you have to come back from an ambulance for? If they let him out of the hospital, I guess he can just go into his own car, no? That's just, I don't know. Some people will say, well, he brought the ambulance for Randy Orton because he knew he was leaving in it. Okay, whatever, if you want to stretch it that far. Anyway, the Hurt Business defeat Cedric Alexander, Ricochet, and Apollo Crews. 6-man tag team match when Cedric Alexander apparently, possibly, turns heel. Now, why I'm saying apparently and possibly is because they didn't wait 2 minutes. Not 2 minutes. Before they had Shelton Benjamin say, if this is a setup or some kind of a game, you and I are going to have trouble. Now, I don't know why you'd do that. I don't know why you'd already institute some trouble between team members if there isn't going to be any. So let's hope that Cedric Alexander really has turned heel, because I think it'll be better for him. If not, and this is just to set up Shelton Benjamin, Cedric Alexander, that is not good, because that is not going to be as good as Cedric Alexander Ricochet would be. You're going to get a lot of great matches between Cedric Alexander and Ricochet. I just found that a little bit odd, Todd, that they already kind of hedged their bets on Cedric Alexander.
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, like you said, it's like last night when I see the Hurt Business wearing old black and gold, wearing the black and gold outfits, and I see Cedric Alexander wearing the same thing. Like, I think they kind of put. I would have waited until had different ring gear from the Hurt Business, then turn heel.
I just don't know if he's really even turned heel or there's some kind of a plot twist. I don't know. I do know I love the Hurt Business. I think they're doing well. I hope they don't spoil it. But we'll be talking about some spoiling in a minute, Mike. So what do you think?
Right. And really, that's not the guy I expected to turn heel. You know, we've been talking about when is Apollo going to turn heel? When is he going to do it? When is he going to, if at all, you know? That's who.
Yep.
Now, this is a surprise, but like you said, I don't like what Shelton Benjamin is coming off as being, what's the term, conspiratorial, whatever the term is, like a nut job that thinks everything is going to happen that probably isn't going to happen. You know, that's how he's appearing to me, when he should have just taken it as a given that now maybe he was told to do this. I don't know.
I'm sure he was.
I mean, maybe they should never have told him to do this though.
No, of course not, because what is the point of wasting the fans' time by planting a seed that this could potentially be a trick if it's not a trick? What's the point? Oh, it's a swerve. No, it's not a swerve. It's just dumb. Either turn heel or you don't. Now, if he has, I think it's a good move, and I think he fits into the Hurt Business well, not as well as Apollo Crews would have. But I'll accept it. So then the Street Profits come out, and they're fighting Garza and Andrade. And here's where we get to the ruining bit. You can't get anything right, WWE, can you? You just can't do it. If you think, in your wildest imagination, that Andrade has more charisma and potential fan support than Angel Garza, you have lost your mind. If you're going to turn anyone bitterly heel in that team, and they're both heels, but if you're going to turn anyone much more heel and try to get fan sympathy for one side or the other, it better be for Garza. And no, of course it wasn't. You have to go for the other guy. So now I'm going to tell you ahead of time what's going to happen, and you don't have to waste your fall watching it. Angel Garza and Andrade are going to come to blows. Zelina Vega is going to take Andrade's side. There's going to be a series of matches which Andrade will win. They'll probably flip face, and Angel Garza's career is mid-carded. Dumb. And you did it in such a way, it doesn't even make any sense. Why would Angel Garza even come to the ring if he has decided I'm doing exactly nothing? Why would he even make the effort? Why would he be happy they lost? So much about this does not make sense, Mike. It was actually irritating to watch.
Right. It doesn't make sense. And the fact of the matter is, like you said, we've been talking about Garza for how long now, and when, and the question has always been, when is he going to flip face? You know, when is he going to do it? When is he going to do it? This would have been, if they had done it right, this would have been a start of it, if they'd done it right.
Yep. Unfortunately, they don't seem to be able to do that, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said, about Angel Garza and Andrade. I think, like you said, I think the same thing, too, with the WWE's making a big mistake having Andrade be turning face. I would have Garza to be the face, then Andrade to still be the heel.
That would be
a better idea right there.
Of course it would. He's the one with the manager who's got the big mouth. It just doesn't make any sense. Anyway, Peyton Royce takes on Billy Kay. And this was confusing. Because at the end of the match, she embraces Billy Kay. And I'm waiting for her to, you know, turn again on her and beat her ass. And she doesn't. And I'm like, well, what the hell's going on? Are they friends? Are they not? What the hell is going on? Now, we're going to run through some of this very quickly because we also should talk about Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura coming out and challenging the Street Profits. That'll be a good match. I'm really liking Shinsuke Nakamura's newfound mic skills. He's doing a lot better. I thought he was pretty funny. He's always had the good body language and facial expressions, but now he's starting to come along here, and I think this tag team could really be something if they keep pressing it. Now, that probably means that the Street Profits will annihilate them. We then got Raw Women's Champion Asuka and Mickie James defeated Natalya and Lana via submission. Why? Why? And then, oh, the Hurt Business is back. Here we come back again. And we're going to take on the Viking Raiders, Ricochet, Apollo Crews, in an 8-man tag team match. Okay, well, they've wrestled twice in one night. Cedric Alexander gets the win, I guess. I mean, you want to talk about, I know they wanted to make this win look controversial. They don't want it to look like Ricochet got pinned before they have those solo matches. And I absolutely agree with it, and I understand it. But Jesus Christ, you can't make it that obvious. Hey, Ricochet, you're not supposed to kick out like you're Brock Lesnar kicking out of James Ellsworth. You're just barely supposed to get your shoulder up so they can say, let's watch that back and see if we can't. Oh, no, see, the referee didn't see that. Referee didn't see it. You'd have to be Stevie Wonder not to see it. I don't know, Mike. They may have told him to do that, but that looks like a blown spot to me.
That was a blown spot, and frankly, you know, Ricochet shouldn't have taken the pin. If anything, one of the Viking Raiders should have taken the pin because, one, I think they want to keep Apollo strong because they want him to eventually get that title back, and two, they want Ricochet. They should want Ricochet strong because, well, the matches between Ricochet and Cedric Alexander are coming up. So, you know, neither one of those guys should have taken the pin. It should have been one of the Viking Raiders. I mean, you know, where are they at now?
Or even if you want Ricochet to take a controversial pin, he just barely has to get his shoulder off the mat. So you could say, it's feasible the referee didn't see that, but Ricochet has a legitimate argument. It's not feasible the referee didn't see that. It's just not feasible, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Like you said, it was just a bad spot right there. And, you know, like you said, I would have done it the other way, too. And to say, let's take a look at back at different angles and everything of that replay where Ricochet arm was barely sticking out.
Right, because then at least you can have Ricochet being the good guy saying, look, I think all the fans saw what happened. I'm not going to complain about it. This kind of stuff happens in pro wrestling. But I think the fans know the truth, and Cedric, you know the truth. And when we fight again, we'll see. That would have been a whole lot better than I kicked out like, you know, Brock Lesnar kicks out. sent the guy flying in the air, and the referee didn't see it. Outrageous. Then we get the Raw Underground, supposed to be Kevin Owens versus Aleister Black, which I was very interested in. Except the one thing that really interested me is this. Aleister Black returns to attack Kevin Owens on Raw, but you're going to settle it in the Underground? So please explain to me what the Underground is. Is it a real part of Raw that is sanctioned? Is it not? What the fuck is it? If you can start feuds on the actual program and finish them up in the Underground, my thought is that the Underground is an actual sanctioned part of Monday Night Raw. But of course, they can't keep up that pace. So they break it up into three or four sections to make it look like they've been fighting a long time. Why would you ever do that? What other fight does that? In the middle of Peyton Royce versus Billy Kay, do they say, wait a minute, we're going to go to another fight? We'll come back to this one. They don't do that. So that just makes the whole thing look silly. Aleister Black and Kevin Owens are both screwed. And I'll tell you why they're both screwed, because they were both thrown to the wolves so they can get that, I don't even remember what the guy's name is, so they can get this other dude over. Because instead of this match being about who's going to win, Kevin Owens or Aleister Black, it's, oh no, this big dude has annihilated both men. Wow, your character's doing well, Aleister. Your new gimmick's doing well. You got annihilated by a newcomer. And Kevin, boy, that 5-year contract looks sweet now, right? Wow. Just unbelievable. That's all I can say. It's just unbelievable. No direction, no reason, no rhyme. Randy Orton defeats Keith Lee by disqualification. And what was that disqualification? Oh, Drew McIntyre attacks again, like he does every hour of Raw. Because Randy Orton is too stupid to realize. Apparently, he's supposed to be the most, you know, one of the most cerebral wrestlers. He knows how to get into your mind, and he knows how to do whatever. Well, he's obviously dumb as a brick. Because Drew McIntyre attacked him every single hour and got away with it. That doesn't make Randy Orton look that great, which makes me think he's winning the friggin' belt. Keith Lee did the exact right thing. He took the stunner. By the way, the block that he had for the stunner was great at first. But when he took the stunner, you didn't want it to appear like Keith Lee was going to lose. And only Drew McIntyre saved him. So Keith Lee bounced himself out of the ring, making it look like, well, he might not have lost because he fell out of the ring. That was very good booking. And then along comes Drew McIntyre again. Now, mind you, Drew McIntyre's on the screen a dozen times saying, yeah, I'm still in the arena. I'm still floating around, but Randy Orton can't figure it out, Mike, that he might get attacked again.
Right. And it's like, okay, you see him one time, he even says, oh, I picked up the wrong phone.
Right, right.
I have a phone, but I picked the wrong phone, and I got to come back and get my phone. I'm in the arena, so yeah. One and one is two, right? I mean,
yeah.
Simple math, you know, and that's the thing. And I did like that spot with the, well, basically it's the cutter, but they call it a second, one more time, somebody call it a second rate diamond cutter, all right, which is Diamond Dallas Page. But anyway, yeah, I like and basically what they said when he did that, he just overpowered the move by blocking it the way he did. You know?
Right. Yeah, that was a nice spot. No question about it. But Todd, should Randy Orton not have figured out that when Drew McIntyre's on the Titantron constantly saying, I'm back in the arena, that he might yet get attacked again?
Yeah, like you said, it's just a bad spot right there, too. And the Titantron, he kept coming back to the arena quite a few times, three times last night.
Right. But Randy Orton can't figure out that, gee, he might be hanging around to attack me again. But Randy is very cerebral. Okay. Now comes the guilty pleasure of the night. I don't like the 24/7 belt, and I never did, but I am absolutely loving Akira Tozawa. Akira Tozawa made me laugh out loud last night when I was not really in a good mood watching most of this show. I don't know if Tozawa is ever going to be taken as a serious, serious competitor, but if he is happy doing this sort of comedic third-rate title type thing, he's certainly entertaining doing it. He's certainly entertaining doing it. Having the ninja pop his head up from the table was funny. It was just funny. It was stupid, but it was funny. And, you know, the thing is, you find the right combination of people. There's not everybody who can do this. Drake Maverick was good at it. R-Truth has always been good at it. And now you found Tozawa, and he's excellent at this. Because Tozawa's facial expressions are gold. Just watching how expressive he is funny in itself, Mike.
It really is. And look, I don't want to see her go back to it, but when Carmella was with him, she was kind of good at it as well.
Yep.
Comedic stuff. But I don't want to see her go back to it, but she was good with it as well. The combination of these two guys, the guy who is obviously a veteran in R-Truth, we speculated on what his exact age is, I don't know, whatever, but he still looks great for whatever age he is. And, of course, Tozawa is a little bit younger than him, but the combination of the timing it takes to do this type of comedy and they obviously have a connection, these two guys.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And this is one of these times that actually allow them to not have these 3-minute matches, I would be willing to watch a 10-minute match between these.
So would I. Yep, so would I. And I hope that's what it leads to. Because I really would. I think they earned it. I really do. I think they've earned it. Now, the whole Mysterio tribe comes out. Why? I don't know. They weren't there when Ray was going to have his eye put out. All in the ring. But the whole Mysterio tribe comes out, which makes Dominic sort of look like a baby. It makes everybody look like, well, my parents are accompanying me to school. I don't like it. I don't like it. What I really think should happen here, if you want to be fair to Dominic, is you should have Rey Mysterio let him fight his own battles. Just as simple as that. Because this, again, is the equivalent of, there's a guy bullying me and my parents are taking me to school. Why his sister was there, I just don't know. They just want some TV time. Here's the problem. I like Dominic Mysterio. I think in 3 or 4 years, he could be really, really good. He's going to have to change his look a little, maybe change his body style a little bit, and get better on the mic. But he's got the moves. But when Buddy Murphy popped up on that screen and they engaged back and forth, the only thing I could liken it to is, and I like Steven Seagal, don't get me wrong, I'm about to talk about a Steven Seagal movie, but there was a scene in Under Siege where Tommy Lee Jones, a very respected, award-winning actor, and Steven Seagal engage in a dialogue at the end. Tommy Lee Jones telling Steven Seagal why he's doing what he's doing, and Seagal supposedly telling him why he's wrong. It was embarrassing. It was like watching Laurence Olivier and a high school actor. And unfortunately, rather than hiding Seagal's lack of acting talent, it actually brought it to light. When someone is that much better than you, and you're back and forthing them, it really doesn't do them any favors because it highlights how good they are and how terrible you are. And Buddy Murphy was awesome on that mic last night. Buddy Murphy looked like he meant every word he said. He didn't stumble over anything. Buddy Murphy has everything a wrestler needs to succeed. I don't know why he's not succeeding. He's got the look. He's got the talent. He's got the mic skills. He's got it all. Dominic Mysterio literally takes the mic and say, if you lay one hand on my family, it's the last breath you'll take in or out. It's the last breath you'll take in or out. What he meant was in or out of the ring, but he forgot to say the ring. Most people don't take a breath out unless they've already taken a breath in, Dominic. It was embarrassing. And it highlighted how much better Murphy was. And then, to add in, well, we'll get to that when we get to it. But listen, bottom line of this, Mike, is Dominic Mysterio is no Buddy Murphy on that microphone.
Oh, no. No, he isn't. Now, he's good in the ring, but that's just part of what he needs to be to be good. You know, he's good in the ring. But the thing is you look at what I look at the second Under Siege movie, the one with the train, where at the end of the movie the bad guy says, "There's no way you can stop this countdown," and Steven Seagal says one thing, "Oh, there's no way I can stop this countdown," and then he shoots the computer.
Yeah.
You know, that's what needs to happen with Dominic. Oh, you have somebody that's good on the mic that says, what he says, and then Dominic just needs to have one line.
I understand what you're trying to say. That is why let's stick with Under Siege. If you think about the first Under Siege, Steven Seagal is in the bowels of the ship, being as quiet as a church mouse. No dialogue much, just kicking the frig out of people. Upstairs, you had Gary Busey, Tommy Lee Jones, quality actors showing their chops, making Steven Seagal look like he is on their level. They're not interacting with him, but because he's in the movie, it's like, wow, okay, he's doing all the action, they're doing all the acting. But boy, when the two met, Mike, what a difference you could see.
Right. And that's the thing. And one other thing with this, Marcus, is this, that you look at how they commentated the match, and you could say that he was definitely losing because over and over and over again, the commentators, and it didn't matter who it was, oh, he's trying to prove to Seth Rollins. He's trying to do this. He's trying to prove to Seth Rollins. He's trying to get back in Seth Rollins' good graces. You know, even though they know for a fact that that group is over with.
Right.
They kept saying it. So as much as they kept saying it, that's them telegraphing that Mysterio's going to win the match, even though the match was a good match. And he did. Mysterio did have some good spots, including that one where he came off the top of the monitors in the crowd.
Yeah.
You know.
There are some good spots in the match, but anyway, the Riot Squad has those handicap matches. Why, I don't know. I don't have a lot to say about them. I just think it was a waste of time. We know what it's a setup for. It's a setup for the, you know, championship match, Todd. I found them both kind of boring.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was boring, too. And with the Riot Squad versus Nia Jax, the first, the one match, and Shayna Baszler in the second match, it was just complete boring right there. Like, come on now.
I wasn't happy with either one of those, especially with the fact that they were featured late, like they were something really important. These were not. I didn't think much of this, Mike. What did you think of these two-on-one matches?
Well, the second one really didn't have an ending because and we'll get to this, Retribution shows up. So the second one really didn't have an ending. They beat Shayna Baszler The second was them versus
Nia.
Was them versus Nia Jax. As soon as it looked like they were going to beat Nia Jax, you know, that's when the Retribution shows up. The lights go out, and you really can't. You can hear them counting, but you can't. You don't hear a three, you know.
Right. So I don't know. Listen, as far as the Retribution thing, they cut a little bit of a promo. I wasn't overly impressed with it. I don't think it's going far. This is one of those things that's going to be the first time they lose, it's over. And apparently their grievance is that they were given crumbs, which means they're going to be jabrons. I mean, you can't be a world beater and say we were given crumbs, you know? You can't be Batista and say I was never given anything. Well, no, that's not true. You know, so you're going to have to be basically jabrons. I think they've handled this wrong. I think they've handled this totally wrong. And it's their fault. They had a decent angle and something you could have played on for a little while, but you've handled it wrong because you had to make them disgruntled people who don't figure they ever got their fair share rather than just disruptors and chaotic people who want to rain on your parade, which would have been a hell of a lot better. So anyway, we get to the Dominic Mysterio Murphy match, and the same kid who said, if you lay a hand on anyone in my family, you'll never take a breath in or out, comes down with his whole family with kendo sticks. Here's a thought. If you don't want him to lay your finger on your family, keep your family in the locker room. Because Buddy Murphy didn't come down with anybody. So now Buddy Murphy does not look all that heelish. The ring is surrounded by people on Dominic Mysterio's side with kendo sticks. Buddy Murphy has nobody. It was mind-boggling. And I said, well, at least they're not interfering. And then they interfered. Now, there were a couple of good spots. And truthfully, even though I understand why they did the tying him in the ropes and beating him until he quit, I get that. But truthfully, I would have loved to have seen that match end when he took that, for lack of a better word, sunset flip through the table on the outside. Because that looked devastating. And I'm going to tell you something. That is a move that's dangerous. That's a dangerous move. Because say what you want, he broke that table with his upper body and close to his head. And if you don't get your upper body and your shoulders involved, and you do just end up breaking it with your head, you got a concussion. So when you're playing in that spot, you're like, okay, this is dangerous. And you're doing it with a kid who doesn't have a lot of years of experience. So that's a risky move. And, you know, hats off to him because it looked fantastic. And I was really hoping that they just said, oh, my God, forget it, call the match off. Because if they really did and said, well, this he can't even continue, I would have said, yeah, it makes perfect sense. It looked like killed him. That would make absolutely perfect sense if they said, well, that's it. So, yeah, I mean, look, the match itself was good. I don't know what the future holds for Buddy Murphy. But I just don't think it's the best look in the world for good guys to beat somebody down with kendo sticks 4-on-1. And if you think that makes Dominic Mysterio look like he defended his family, to me it looks like he brought his family to a 1-on-1 fight. Can you imagine if somebody challenges you to a fight and you say, I'm bringing my uncle and my older brother and my tough sister, and we're all kicking your ass? Well, okay, but I didn't invite them to the fight. I thought it was going to be me and you. So I just don't like this look for Dominic, Mike.
I don't know. I don't like it either. I mean, what would we be saying if, you know, if Charlotte brought Rick and Beth and David and you know,
to and Fifi the maid, that's his current wife or girlfriend, Ric Flair, you know, brought them all with her to some match. What would we be saying?
Right, right. Now, the best part of this whole thing, in my opinion, if there was one, and this is the one that makes me say, could you please push Buddy Murphy? When Rey Mysterio took the mic during their diatribe and said, and Rey's not terrible on the mic. I mean, he's had 50 years to not be. Rey says, how dare you blame us? You're the one who chose to put your faith in a son of a bitch who's only out for himself like Seth Rollins. And Buddy Murphy's response is, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. That's a good response. But it doesn't change things. Now, I hope there's more in the future for Buddy Murphy, because I'm actually entertained listening to him do his shtick. And I think he makes an excellent heel. But I could see him making a decent babyface, too. I think you might have something in Buddy Murphy if you play your cards right, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Dale. Like you said, last night when I watched that match, that no disqualification match, the mother of Dominic, like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to.
I know.
I don't want to do this. This is not right. Like, she.
I know. And then the sister's tapping him like she's testing to see if he's done, like he's a turkey in the oven, and is he done yet? It was just terrible. What do you think of the spot, though, where he went through the table on the outside with his shoulders and head, though? That was good, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said. It's a little dangerous, but I think he needs to work on that a little bit.
I think he did it well, but it looked devastating, right? I mean, it looked like it killed him. When I saw it, I was like, well, that's it, match over. I was expecting I really was expecting the announcers to say, oh, my God, that's it, forget it. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. It was a really good spot, Mike.
It really was, you know, and that's the deal. It really was a really good spot. Now, can he, you know, again, we know what Dominic he needs to improve. We know that, you know. But in the ring, he's fine, you know. And as long as he's getting the tutelage from his dad, he's still fine, you know. Now, maybe his dad can tell him that you're going to have to get better on the mic and help him at that. But he'll be fine as long as his dad's there to help guide his career, you know.
Yeah, but I think they're going to have to tell the WWE you can't have his dad bring him to school every day. At some point, he's going to have to stand on his own.
Yeah. I mean,
otherwise, he looks like a punk.
Yep.
So, right. I mean, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah. Remember, just think about it this way. Charlotte Flair had. Ric Flair was coming out with Charlotte Flair on a consistent enough basis, all right? And then all of a sudden, because Charlotte Flair kicked it up a notch, you know, he was able to step back a little bit, all right? So
yeah.
That's what's going to happen. That's what's going to have to happen. Now, Charlotte Flair is, what, almost a decade older than Dominic Mysterio.
Yes.
But, you know, so, but the thing is, can Dominic in the next, say, 2 or 3 years improve to the point that he doesn't need his dad there?
See, well, that's the problem. I don't think Dominic needs his dad there at all for the moves in the ring. I think Dominic needs him to get over, sort of. Like, I don't know if Dominic can stand on his own. If there was a live crowd, I'm not 100% sure Dominic Mysterio is getting huge pops. I think some of his moves might, but I don't know if he is. And I'm not a big fan of bringing down some 17-year-old girl to beat somebody with a kendo stick. It looks stupid. I get it. Well, you did this to my whole family. Yeah, but I mean, nobody put their hands on either one of those women. So I don't know. Again, the look is a kid who is challenged to a one-on-one fight shows up with his family. I don't like that look. Not for a face, I don't. Now, this whole underground thing, I don't know what they're going to do with it. But am I right in saying, Mike, that Kevin Owens and Aleister Black last night were virtually thrown to the wolves? I mean, these are two top names, and this guy, whose name I can't pronounce, and I'll have to remember it, literally crushes the both of them in seconds.
Right, you get right. And you're right about, you know, here's your 5-year contract, now you're going to be taking pinfalls, Kevin Owens. You know, I mean, I don't understand why the WWE keeps doing that. I mean, I guess I do, because we talked about, well, we're going to keep you because we don't want anybody else to have you type of thing. But,
right.
But if you're going to do this to the guy, then you're just better off letting him go anyway. Make his money where you can make his money, you know? And
I agree. We have to say this quickly, and then we'll get to our ratings. The news came out that the WWE is going to allow all of the YouTube channels to remain for the wrestlers. As long as they use their real names, they can use their YouTube channels. But the Cameo stuff, that's coming to an end. So some of the YouTube is still going to be around. They're going to try to get you to put it on the WWE channel, but they're not going to force you to. So it's a little 50-50, you know, type thing, a little give and take. Anyway, Todd, look, there was some good, some bad, but a lot of repetitive stuff. I mean, we have seen Angel Garza and Andrade against the Street Profits every week for I don't know how long. And we have seen the Hurt Business against Alexander and Apollo and Ricochet for I just don't know how long. There's so much of this that's repetitive. What's your rating this week?
Man, it's kind of like a mixed bag. Kind of it was good. Kind of was bad. I'm going to give it a B.
Okay, so Todd gives it a B. What's your thoughts, Mike?
You know, Todd said a mixed bag, but a B doesn't go well with a mixed bag. So I'm not go almost a whole letter grade below that and say a C plus. I like some of the matches. I like some of the spots. I mean, Asuka is in a zone right now.
She is, yeah.
She is in a zone, and as soon as they decide to get rid of this damn Thunderdome thing and allow the fans to come back, she is going to connect with the fans in a huge way.
I agree with that.
C+.
I'm going to go one lower. I'm going to say C- because it was too repetitive. I mean, there was just too many things. We watched the Riot Squad fight twice. We watched the Hurt Business fight twice. We watched the Street Profits and Andrade and Angel Garza again. We watch Alexander and Apollo and Ricochet fight twice. It's like, my God, how many repetitive things are you going to do? So I'm going to give it a C-. We'll see what happens tonight with their NXT's Tuesday night when we have Adam Cole and Finn Balor. One of them will become the new NXT champion. And we will be back here on Friday to discuss it. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
WrestleChat Radio is